And now, if you would please join me in welcoming Professor Paul Swinson to the pulpit. Our guest speaker is me.
Welp, I'm back. As Gary was saying, this is the fourth time that I've spoken here, and it's always been about the same time of year. It's always July. And the other three times, I pretty much gave a modified kind of a history lecture. But this time, it's going to be a little different, because I'm going to spend some time on history. I can't really help myself. But I'm also going to be talking about myself, because in the age of Donald Trump, narcissism is back in style. About 7 or 8 years ago, I decided to finally join the 21st century, and I got myself a Facebook account and started doing some social networking, getting in touch with old friends, standard stuff. And it wasn't long before I discovered that there are all kinds of interest group pages talking about history and politics and teaching and all sorts of stuff. And I spent a lot of time getting in these long dialogues, increasingly long political dialogues. And then before you knew it, I decided that since I couldn't always summarize my thoughts in 140 characters or less, I started a blog, and a guy who didn't know what a blog was suddenly writing 2 or 3 blog posts a week, often really long blog posts too, and trying to see if I could do what I've been doing in the classroom all these years on kind of a larger scale, promote critical thinking, get people on the two sides of our political divide to maybe start actually, you know, talking to each other and seeing common ground. Because, you know, when you're looking for rational discussion, the internet is the place to go. So maybe I was a bit naive. My heart was in the right place. But as the years dragged on, I mean, it wasn't a total waste of time. I did get a history book out of it. I think it was a good kind of mental exercise to go through. But over the past couple of years, I was starting to burn out a bit and not write so much and not argue so much. Turns out that I ran into two groups of people, either people who more or less agreed with what I was saying or people who wanted to argue. And I got tangled up in these long arguments that always seemed to degenerate into the same discussion. It's like you can take almost every argument, it becomes about 5 discussions over and over and over again. And then Donald Trump came along and pretty much finished me off. I've been on a largely writing and social networking hiatus, I guess, for the last 6 months to a year. One of the last long blogs I wrote was a write-up of the last sermon I gave about a year ago. I was trying to give some historical background to explain, you know, how Donald Trump and somewhat how Bernie Sanders did so well in the 2016 election. At the time, I had no idea Trump would actually win. I knew he had a chance. He had gotten that far, after all. But ever since he won, I feel like I'm watching a Saturday Night Live skit that just never ends. I almost have to slap myself every day and remind myself that this is actually happening. Ever since the election, I find myself going back to words of wisdom my dad would often say. My dad, like most dads, would repeat the same thing over and over again, you know, thinking it was the first time he'd said it. And he would point out to me, you know, half the people in the world are of below average intelligence. Statistically, that is, you know, pretty accurate. And he also made it clear on many occasions he didn't think that average was particularly high to begin with. So those words of wisdom have been ringing in my ears a lot lately. But I would modify my dad's basic kind of lesson about life and say the problem isn't so much that people are stupid, but that people are essentially irrational. A lot of the decisions people make have nothing to do with intellect or reason. They have the capacity for it. The problem is that all these impulses, emotions that are swirling around in our brains all the time that we can't really control, for lack of a better phrase, those emotions sometimes trump reason. For as long as there have been theologians, philosophers, eventually psychologists, people have talked about the strange things going on in the human mind, this kind of internal battle happening between, it's phrased in different ways. It's emotion versus reason. It's the flesh versus the spirit. It's body versus soul. If you're a fan of Sigmund Freud, it's id versus ego. And I hate to admit it, but it turns out that I'm human too, which means that I can be as irrational as everyone else. I mean, there are a lot of perfectly logical reasons to think that Donald Trump is a bad and even potentially dangerous president. But the degree of, I'd call it rage mixed with contempt, that I find myself feeling most of the time when I hear the guy speak or try to talk to his supporters, that's not necessarily rational. It's not really healthy either to have this kind of rage brewing all the time. And what's particularly irrational is that I allow, you know, Donald Trump's election to make me think that the entire human race is somehow more stupid now, or the world is a bigger mess. So my talk today, as fun as it would be and as cathartic as it would be to give a big, raving anti-Trump sermon, that's not what I'm going to do. And if I do my job correctly for the next few minutes, people of all political views should be able to relate and find some value in it, because turns out we all are on the losing side sometimes. We all have times when it feels like the world's going down the toilet and everyone's an idiot. So the question is, when you feel that way, how do you kind of keep pressing on and engaging with the world and trying to have some positive effect? And essentially what I'm doing, I said it's a little bit narcissistic, is sharing my sort of internal dialogue going on all the time as my more rational side is trying to convince my more emotional side, keep going. It's not that bad, necessarily. There is hope. It's kind of like mantras repeating in my head over and over again. Every time you feel a rage, you're like, no, it's okay. Just run through the list. So here's number one in the list. First of all, it's good to have a healthy emotional outlet, to recognize those feelings are there and to find a way to kind of deal with them. I mean, one good thing is to find someone with similar feelings and kind of rant to each other. But I also think of a song I heard for the first time a couple weeks ago. Sangeeta and I went to see the Book of Mormon musical, and I wanted to tie it into my sermon because it was such a profound spiritual experience, the Book of Mormon musical. There's a song in it called Turn It Off, and it's a bunch of Mormon missionaries describing how they deal with uncomfortable emotions and feelings. When you start feeling anything bad, just switch it off and smile and be happy. I don't advocate that approach as a healthy emotional, not really outlet. I'm enough of a psychologist to know that emotional repression does not end well. So what are my healthy emotional releases? Well, one good thing is comedy, bringing up Book of Mormon. LMAO is what I did when I saw that. But if you know the acronym. But I also used to find The Daily Show and The Colbert Report my favorite sources of news, because I could just sit there and mock everybody. That was sort of a release, I guess. Exercise, I find, is a release. Wailing away on a racquetball for 2 hours can do a lot for you. One of my favorite pastimes now is to yell back at the radio while I'm driving. I recommend doing this alone, because it could get annoying, and you can be more free when you're by yourself and say whatever is on your mind. I've developed a pretty good Jeff Sessions and Mitch McConnell impersonation lately doing that. One emotional outlet I don't recommend is to use the internet. I can't tell you how many times in the last few months I've come across people who almost daily feel the need to rant online, often punctuating their rant with a string of middle finger emojis. That's generally a bad idea. When you put things out there into cyberspace, not so easy to just take those back. So I've held back the temptation to just kind of go off on those online rants. I stick with yelling at the radio. But you see, I want to do more than simply kind of maintain my sanity and emotionally cope. How can you go beyond that and continue to try to go out there and push to make a better world when you don't feel like it? And this is where I'm going to turn a little bit to history. I'm going to start with two seemingly contradictory things. First, in politics, especially national politics, you look back at history, things can change fast. At one moment, one political party seems dominant, the other one's down in the toilet, and before you know it, everything flips around again. 1928, Herbert Hoover wins in a landslide, 58% of the popular vote. Only the Deep South voted Democrat. 4 years later, he's annihilated in the same landslide, only he's on the other side. 1964, Lyndon Johnson, when I think he lost one state in that election, had massive majorities in the House and the Senate, pushes through the most aggressive program of legislation we've probably ever seen in the country. And 4 years later, Richard Nixon, a guy who seemed dead politically just a few years before, wins. 1972, he wins a landslide as big as Lyndon Johnson's. Now, in those cases, you can point to certain events. The Great Depression kind of did Hoover in. The Vietnam War kind of did Johnson in. But more recently, it's more confusing. You know, Barack Obama, 2008, wins in a landslide. Democratic majorities in the House and Senate. 8 years later, we get Donald Trump. How the heck did that happen? And what's happening next? Who knows? All signs indicate 2018, if Democrats don't blow it, could be a good year, but you never know. Things can change fast. But, you know, as the parties kind of shift, the main thing I've noticed throughout my life is that someone new comes in and things don't change that much. I like to focus more on the important changes, not just who's sitting in the White House at the moment. And if you're a person who wants to see real change happen, I hope you're patient, because things can change, but it tends to happen slowly. Look back at every major social movement in American history. Go back to initially the right to take away property requirements for voting, or women's rights, or workers' rights, or the multiple civil rights movements, or gay rights. It tends to take decades to see real change eventually happen. So if you give up or burn out because one election doesn't go your way, good luck having any success in terms of real important change. But I always try to keep in mind, as hard as it can be, as long as it takes, things do sometimes change. A black man can get elected president. Gay marriage can be legalized all of a sudden. I mean, these are things that were unimaginable not that long ago, and we still got plenty of problems. But this idea that nothing ever changes, that's irrational, too. So you got to take the long view. You know, yeah, it's been 20, 30, 40 years. We're just getting going. Give it another 50, man. Everything's going to turn around. I mean, the first Women's Rights Convention was in 1848. They get the right to vote in 1920. I hope you don't give up fast. Second mantra. When it comes to politics, there's more to life than Washington, D.C. There's a tendency to fixate on Washington all the time. What's happening in Congress? What has Trump tweeted today? You know, that kind of a thing. But there's a lot more to government than what's happening in Washington, thankfully. There's the state level, county level, city level. And when you start talking about city politics, especially, but also state politics to some degree, there's some reason for hope. I just heard a week or so ago, a letter was sent to Congress. A bunch of governors signed on to it. I think it was 11 Democrats, 11 Republicans, and a couple of independents. And they were pleading to Congress on this whole healthcare debate. Can we maybe stop this ongoing argument of either repeal Obamacare or not, and maybe sit down and figure out ways to make the current system maybe work a little better? You know, simple, pragmatic stuff. Because you see state governors, they have to actually deal with administering things and somehow making Medicaid and programs like that work. And they tend to be much more pragmatic out of necessity, because they're dealing with day-to-day problems, and they're more accountable to their constituents, especially those city council people and mayors. You know, the trash doesn't get collected this week, and they're in trouble politically. They worry about getting things done. And they know that simply taking some generic ideological perspective and applying it to every situation doesn't necessarily work in the real world. You got to hand it to Republicans. One thing they figured out that Democrats haven't is that local politics matters. They have poured a lot more effort into city elections, county elections, school board elections, state elections than Democrats have. And you look at statewide politics, they're kicking some butt, which might make you depressed. But as I said, 11 Republican governors signed onto that letter saying, guys, get something done. And when you go even lower, the real work of government, ultimately, is carried out by police officers and people in the fire department and teachers. And you got your bureaucrats and civil servants and social workers. And obviously, not all these people are good, but a lot of them are. And they are conscientious people trying to do their best, including people like me. And theoretically, I can have a much bigger impact on the few hundred students I have every semester than Donald Trump can when you get down to the personal level. You know, the Roman Empire, during their heyday, the Pax Romana for 200 years, that's when you had some of the really insane emperors. You know, we're talking the Caligulas and Neros and people like that. And somehow that system kept churning along even when you had downright insane leaders. As long as the basic civil service is intact and people are doing their jobs day by day, things seem to kind of, you know, flow along. And plus, this is a little insight for the Republicans out there. I know you're out there somewhere. Don't always look to government, for God's sakes, to do everything. There are so many people in the private sector. There are plenty just want to make a lot of money, but there are plenty of others out there who are coming up with innovative ways of trying to tackle some of these problems. And they learned a long time ago, don't go waiting for government to make things happen. You come up with a major technological innovation that can have a far bigger impact than any politicians ever have. Change in the end tends to start at the bottom and work its way up. If you look to the people at the top to change everything, you'll probably be waiting for a long time. They start to change when they're kind of shoved in the right direction. Third lesson. This is a good history lesson. Keep some perspective. Things always seem worse when you're in the middle of it. Right now you might think, oh my God, it's the worst times ever. If you think that, you've never cracked open a history book in your life. Worst times ever? You've got to be kidding me. Has our world hit a low point in terms of division between the two political parties? Well, we did have a thing called the Civil War, where people massacred each other by the hundreds of thousands because of little political differences. Don't even have to go back that far. Go back to the 1960s. You got all sorts of things swirling around. You've got civil rights battles and the Vietnam War and all this stuff. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of division today, but I know from many years of reading a lot of depressing stuff. That's our job as history teachers, read depressing stuff. It'll make you much happier about the present when you read a lot of history. I mean, Civil War, 1960s, Great Depression, World War II, just go on and on. I mean, yeah, there are bad things out there, but we've seen worse. Finally, last little mantra, try to keep talking. Try to keep blogging, social networking, dialoguing, whatever it is. You don't always know what impact you might be having. I can't tell you how many times, and my kids can attest to this in some occasions, I've ran into students just in random places. I'll be like at Disneyland or something like that. I'll just be walking around campus in a restaurant, and they'll be like, hey, I remember you. And most of the time, they say to me, they actually like my class. I had no idea at the time there were all these people out there who actually liked my class. They didn't always seem like they did, but they would tell me later, you know, you were actually a good teacher. I got something out of it. So you never know, you know, you might be rubbing off on a few people. And even online, I mean, You may have heard the term, I may be messing this up and making this a little too stalker-like, but the term lurker, the lurkers online who don't actually ever type comments very much or say anything, but they're actually reading all these, you know, long dialogues. So I'm sitting there arguing with somebody, getting pissed off because they won't ever admit they remotely could ever change their mind about anything. And I just wonder, why am I doing this? It's a massive waste of time, but maybe there are 5, 10, 20, 30 other people reading this stuff. And I try to keep in mind, too, that the more reasonable people tend to be the ones who aren't saying very much. So there may be all these people I'll never know about who, if I say anything actually wise in the course of all these dialogues, maybe it will have some impact on them. And maybe even the person who would never admit it, it might slightly rub off on them a little bit. It's important to keep in mind anyway, it's not always about results. This is a very kind of Unitarian, universalist thing to say. I don't think we're ever going to be able to compete with a lot of other religious belief systems in terms of raw numbers, because our sales pitch in some ways isn't as good. I mean, we don't have any guarantees. There's no guaranteed eternal paradise you're going to get if you believe the right stuff and do the right stuff. And more importantly, there's no guaranteed punishment place if you do the wrong stuff that we're selling, right? All we're selling is do what's right. Why? Because it's right. That's why you do it. And, you know, that can get frustrating, that sort of point of view on life. Especially, it's not just hard because you're not guaranteed that your side is going to win or that you're going to see positive consequences. It's especially hard because you might suffer for it, doing what's right. I mean, there are a few things virtually every religious belief system can agree upon. And one thing is, if you follow our moral code, you're going to pay a price for it. And that's one thing to do it when you know you're going to go off to some martyr's heaven somewhere. But when there's nothing for you necessarily, except for maybe dead and gone, are you still willing to do what's right when there are harsh consequences potentially? I mean, here I am whining because, oh, no one's listening to me on the internet. I'm going to quit now because it's not worth it. I mean, that's pretty darn wimpy, if you ask me. So if you only keep going because you get some form of external gratification, you will burn out pretty fast. And I guess there's one last question I always ask. What's the alternative to dialogue and eventually compromise? We've seen alternatives throughout human history. Right now, at least in Washington, it seems to be endless gridlock of both sides butting heads and not accomplishing much. Even when one party gets control, they can't seem to accomplish much. So you could have gridlock. We could have another attempt at a secession. Just split this country up, call it a failed experiment. We'll have two Americas, left America, right America. It'll be a great chance for both sides to realize they don't have all the answers to life's problems. Wouldn't it be fun to watch all the liberals get everything they want and realize that problems don't all go away? Or to have conservatives do the same thing? Then maybe we could all sit down and say, oh, that whole secession thing didn't quite pan out. I gotta be honest, though. There have been times recently, the whole secession idea, I used to think that's crazy talk. Now there's a part of me that says, maybe. No, anyway, I'm not pushing for it or anything, but I can kind of see why people are saying it. But when you kind of follow this logically, rationally to where it ends, that probably doesn't end well. We tried it once. It wasn't a pretty picture. And of course, we've also had an endless history of just war after war, people looking for vengeance when things don't go there. That's the alternative. So it's either talk, compromise, or things get ugly. So, you know, I started writing a little bit again. My blogs have gotten shorter. I don't get tangled up in big, long, drawn-out arguments anymore. I kind of put my point out there and sort of leave it at that. But we all have our different talents. As I often tell my students, I've spent my entire life avoiding getting a real job. I basically talk and stuff for a living, and they pay me for it. And as long as I keep doing it, I'm cool. But that's what I'm good at. I mean, my skill is not, you know, building stuff. It's not going out and healing people. It's more talking, writing, trying to encourage critical thinking. Yeah, that's my mission in life, I guess. So I might as well keep doing it and keep plugging away. I came out of, well, I was raised Catholic and was a temporary evangelical Christian before I found my way here. And we used to always talk about our mission fields, you know. You got to have your one sort of area, your one focus. Do the best you can there. And that's the plan. So if you see me online at some point posting some rant, you can repeat my lessons back to me. Calm down. Also, don't quit. Keep on going. All right. That's all I got to say. So, see you around. Maybe next July.
Paul, you always seem to find that nice balance between making me laugh and making my head hurt.